4. Oaths. I know that many women who read this will see it only as further proof that I am the godless heretic everyone claims. From Oathbringer, Preface. 2 days after Satius was found dead, the Everstorm came again. Dalinar walked through his chambers in Uirthiru, pulled by the unnatural storm. Bare feet on cold rock. He passed Navani, who sat at the writing desk working on her memoirs again, and stepped onto his balcony, which hung straight out over the cliffs beneath Uirthiru. He could feel something, his ears popping, cold, even more cold than usual, blowing in from the west. And something else, an inner chill. "Is that you, Stormfather?" Dalinar whispered. "This feeling of dread?" "This thing is not natural," the Stormfather said. "It is unknown."
"It didn't come before, during the earlier desolations?"
"No, it is new."
As always, the Stormfather's voice was far off, like very distant thunder. The Stormfather didn't always reply to Dalinar and didn't remain near him. That was to be expected. He was the soul of the storm. He could not, should not, be contained. And yet there was an almost childish petulance to the way he sometimes ignored Dalinar's questions. It seemed that sometimes he did so merely because he didn't want Dalinar to think that he would come whenever called. The Everstorm appeared in the distance, its black clouds lit from within by crackling red lightning. It was low enough in the sky that, fortunately, its top wouldn't reach Uirthiru. It surged like a cavalry, trampling the calm, ordinary clouds below. Dalinar forced himself to watch that wave of darkness flow around Urethiru's plateau. Soon it seemed as if their lonely tower were a lighthouse looking over a dark, deadly sea. It was hauntingly silent. Those red lightning bolts didn't rumble with thunder in the proper way. He heard the occasional crack, stark and shocking, like 100 branches snapping at once. But the sounds didn't seem to match the flashes of red light that rose from deep within. The storm was so quiet, in fact, that he was able to hear the telltale rustle of cloth as Navani slipped up behind him. She wrapped her arms around him, pressing against his back, resting her head against his shoulder. His eyes flickered down, and he noticed that she'd removed the glove from her safe hand. It was barely visible in the dark, slender, gorgeous fingers, delicate, with the nails painted a blushing red. He saw it by the light of the first moon above and by the intermittent flashes of the storm beneath.
"Any further word from the west?" Dalinar whispered.
The Everstorm was slower than a high storm, and had hit Shinovar many hours before. It did not recharge spheres, even if you left them out during the entire Everstorm.
"The Spanreads are abuzz. The monarchs are delaying a response, but I suspect that soon they'll realize that they have to listen to us."
"I think you underestimate the stubbornness a crown can press into a man or woman's mind, Navani."
Dalinar had been out during his share of high storms, particularly in his youth. He'd watched the chaos of the storm wall pushing rocks and refuse before it, the sky splitting lightning, the claps of thunder. High storms were the ultimate expression of nature's power, wild, untamed, sent to remind man of his insignificance. However, high storms never seemed hateful. This storm was different. It felt vengeful. Staring into that blackness below, Dalinar thought he could see what it had done. A series of impressions thrown at him in anger. The storm's experiences as it had slowly crossed Roshar. Houses ripped apart, screams of the occupants lost to the tempest. People caught in their fields running in a panic before the unpredicted storm. Cities blasted with lightning, towns cast into shadow, fields swept barren. And vast seas of glowing red eyes coming awake like spheres suddenly renewed with stormlight. Dalinar hissed out a long, slow breath, the impressions fading.
"Was that real?" he whispered.
"Yes," the Stormfather said. "The enemy rides the storm. He's aware of you, Dalinar."
Not a vision of the past, not some possibility of the future. His kingdom, his people, his entire world was being attacked. He drew a deep breath. At the very least, this wasn't the singular tempest that they'd experienced when the Everstorm had clashed with the High Storm for the first time. This seemed less powerful. It wouldn't tear down cities, but it did rain destruction upon them, and the winds would attack in bursts, hostile, even deliberate. The enemy seemed more interested in preying upon the small towns, the fields, the people caught unaware. Though it was not as destructive as he'd feared, it would still leave thousands dead. It would leave cities broken, particularly those without shelter to the west. More importantly, it would steal the Parshman laborers and turn them into void-bringers, loosed on the public. All in all, this storm would exact a price in blood from Roshar that hadn't been seen since, well, since the Desolations. He lifted his hand to grasp Navani's as she in turn held to him.
"You did what you could, Dalinar," she whispered after a time watching. "Don't insist on carrying this failure as a burden."
"I won't."
She released him and turned him around away from the sight of the storm. She wore a dressing gown, not fit to go about in public, but also not precisely immodest. Save for that hand with which she caressed his chin.
"I," she whispered, "don't believe you, Dalinar Kholin. I can read the truth in the tightness of your muscles, the set of your jaw. I know that you, while being crushed beneath a boulder, would insist that you've got it under control and ask to see field reports from your men."
The scent of her was intoxicating, and those entrancing, brilliant violet eyes.
"You need to relax, Dalinar," she said.
"Navani," he said.
She looked at him, questioning, so beautiful. Far more gorgeous than when they'd been young. He'd swear it. For how could anyone be as beautiful as she was now? He seized her by the back of the head and pulled her mouth to his own. Passion woke within him. She pressed her body to his, breasts pushing against him through the thin gown. He drank of her lips, her mouth, her scent. Passion spread fluttered around them like crystal flakes of snow. Dalinar stopped himself and stepped back.
"Dalinar," she said as he pulled away, "your stubborn refusal to get seduced is making me question my feminine wiles."
"Control is important to me, Navani," he said, his voice hoarse. He gripped the stone balcony wall, white-knuckled. "You know how I was, what I became, when I was a man with no control. I will not surrender now."
She sighed and sidled up to him, pulling his arm free of the stone, then slipping under it.
"I won't push you, but I need to know. Is this how it's going to continue? Teasing? Dancing on the edge?"
"No," he said, staring out over the darkness of the storm. "That would be an exercise in futility. A general knows not to set himself up for battles he cannot win."
"Then what?"
"I'll find a way to do it right.
With oaths." The oaths were vital. The promise. The act of being bound together.
"How?"
she said, then poked him in the chest.
"I'm as religious as the next woman. More than most, actually. But Kadash turned us down, as did Ladent, even Rushu. She squeaked when I mentioned it and literally ran away."
"Chanada," Dalinar said, speaking of the senior Ardent of the war camps. "She spoke to Kadash and had him go to each of the Ardents. She probably did it the moment she heard we were courting."
"So, no Ardent will marry us,"
Navani said. They consider us siblings. You're stretching to find an impossible accommodation. Continue with this, and it's going to leave a lady wondering if you actually care.
Have you ever thought that? Dalinar said, sincerely.
Well, no.
You are the woman I love, Dalinar said, pulling her tight. A woman I have always loved.
Then who cares? She said. Let the Ardens hide a damnation with ribbons around their ankles.
Blasphemous.
I'm not the one telling everyone that God is dead.
Not everyone, Dalinar said.
He sighed, letting go of her, with reluctance, and walked back into his rooms where a brazier of coal radiated welcome warmth, as well as the room's only light. They had recovered his fabrial heating device from the war camps, but didn't yet have the stormlight to run it. The scholars had discovered long chains and cages, apparently used for lowering spheres down into the storms, so they'd be able to renew their spheres if the high storms ever returned. In other parts of the world, the weeping had restarted, then fitfully stopped. It might start again, or the proper storms might start up. Nobody knew, and the Stormfather refused to enlighten him. Navani entered and pulled the thick drapings closed over the doorway, tying them tightly in place. This room was heaped with furniture, chairs lining the walls, rolled rugs stacked atop them. There was even a standing mirror. The images of twisting windspren along its sides bore the distinctly rounded look of something that had been carved first from weevil wax, then soul-cast into hardwood. They had deposited all this here for him, as if worried about their high prince living in simple stone quarters.
"Let's have someone clear this out for me tomorrow," Dalinar said. "There's room enough for it in the chamber next door, which we can turn into a sitting room or a common room."
Navani nodded as she settled onto one of the sofas. He saw her reflected in the mirror, her hand still casually uncovered, gown dropping to the side, exposing neck, collarbone, and some of what was beneath. She wasn't trying to be seductive right now. She was merely comfortable around him. Intimately familiar, past the point where she felt embarrassed for him to see her uncovered. It was good that one of them was willing to take the initiative in the relationship. For all his impatience to advance on the battlefield, this was one area in which he'd always needed encouragement, same as it had been all those years ago.
"When I married last," Dalinar said softly, "I did many things wrong. I started wrong."
"I wouldn't say that. Your marriage for Shardplate, but many marriages are for political reasons. That doesn't mean you were wrong. If you'll recall, we all encouraged you to do it."
As always, when he heard his dead wife's name, the word was replaced to his hearing with a breezy sound of rushing air. The name couldn't gain purchase in his mind any more than a man could hold to a gust of wind.
"I'm not trying to replace her, Dalinar," Navani said, suddenly sounding concerned. "I know you still have affection for It's all right. I can share you with her memory."
Oh, how little they all understood. He turned toward Navani, set his jaw against the pane, and said it.
"I don't remember her, Navani."
She looked to him with a frown, as if she thought she hadn't heard him correctly.
"I can't remember my wife at all," he said. "I don't know her face. Portraits of her are a fuzzy smudge to my eyes. Her name is taken from me whenever spoken, like someone has plucked it away. I don't remember what she and I said when we first met. I can't even remember seeing her at the feast that night when she first arrived. It's all a blur. I can remember some events surrounding my wife, but nothing of the actual details. It's all just gone."
Navani raised her safe-hand fingers to her mouth, and from the way her brow knit with concern, he figured he must look like he was in agony. He slumped down in a chair across from her.
"The alcohol?"
she asked softly.
Something more, she breathed out. The old magic. You said you knew both your boon and your curse?
He nodded.
Oh, Dalinar.
People glance at me when her name comes up, Dalinar continued, and they give me these looks of pity. They see me keeping a stiff expression, and they assume I'm being stoic. They infer hidden pain when really I'm just trying to keep up. It's hard to follow a conversation where half of it keeps slipping away from your brain. Navani, maybe I did grow to love her. I can't remember. Not one moment of intimacy, not one fight, not a single word she ever said to me. She's gone, leaving debris that mars my memory. I can't remember how she died. That one gets to me, because there are parts of that day I know I should remember. Something about a city in rebellion against my brother and my wife being taken hostage? That, and a long march alone, accompanied only by hatred and the thrill. He remembered those emotions vividly. He'd brought vengeance to those who had taken his wife from him. Navani settled down on the seat beside Dalinar, resting her head on his shoulder.
Would that I could create a Fabriel, she whispered, to take away this kind of pain. I think losing her must have hurt me terribly, Dalinar whispered, because of what it drove me to do. I am left with only the scars. Regardless, Navani, I want it to be right with us. No mistakes. Done properly with oaths spoken to you before someone.
Mere words.
Words are the most important things in my life right now.
She parted her lips, thoughtful.
Elokar.
I wouldn't want to put him in that position.
A foreign priest. From the Azish, maybe. They're almost foreign.
That would be tantamount to declaring myself a heretic. It goes too far. I will not defy the Vorin Church.
He paused. I might be willing to sidestep it, though.
What?
She asked. He looked upward toward the ceiling.
Maybe we go to someone with authority greater than theirs.
You want a Spren to marry us, she said, sounding amused. Using a foreign priest would be heretical, but not a Spren?
The Stormfather is the largest remnant of honor, Dalinar said. He's a sliver of the Almighty himself, and he's the closest thing to a god we have left.
Oh, I'm not objecting, Navani said. I'd let a confused dishwasher marry us. I just think it's a little unusual.
It's the best we're going to get, assuming he is willing.
He looked at Navani, then raised his eyebrows and shrugged.
Is that a proposal?
Yes.
Dalinar Kolin, she said. Surely you can do better.
He rested his hand on the back of her head, touching her black hair, which she had left loose.
Better than you, Navani? No, I don't think that I could. I don't think that any man has ever had a chance better than this.
She smiled, and her only reply was a kiss. Dalinar was surprisingly nervous as, several hours later, he rode one of Urethiru's strange Fabriel lifts toward the roof of the tower. The lift resembled a balcony, one of many that lined a vast open shaft in the middle of Urethiru, a columnar space as wide as a ballroom which stretched up from the first floor to the last one. The tiers of the city, despite looking circular from the front, were actually more half-circles, with the flat sides facing east. The edges of the lower levels melded into the mountains to either side, but the very center was open to the east. The rooms up against that flat side had windows there, providing a view toward the origin. And here, in this central shaft, those windows made up one wall. A pure, single, unbroken pane of glass hundreds of feet tall. In the day, that lit the shaft with brilliant sunlight. Now it was dark with the gloom of night. The balcony crawled steadily along a vertical trench in the wall. Adolin and Renarin rode with him, along with a few guards and Shallan Devar. Navani was already up above. The group stood on the other side of the balcony, giving him space to think. And to be nervous. Why should he be nervous? He could hardly keep his hands from shaking. Storms. You'd think he was some silk-covered virgin, not a general well into his middle years. He felt a rumbling deep within him. The Stormfather was being responsive at the moment, for which he was grateful. "I'm surprised," Dalinar whispered to the Spren. "You agreed to this so willingly." "Grateful, but still surprised."
"I respect all oaths," the Stormfather responded.
"What about foolish oaths, made in haste or in ignorance?"
"There are no foolish oaths. All are the mark of men and true Spren over beasts and sub-Spren. The mark of intelligence, free will, and choice."
Dalinar chewed on that and found he was not surprised by the extreme opinion. Spren should be extreme. They were forces of nature. But was this how Honor himself, the Almighty, had thought? The balcony ground its inexorable way toward the top of the tower. Only a handful of the dozens of lifts worked. Back when Urethiru flourished, they all would have been going at once. They passed level after level of unexplored space, which bothered Dalinar. Making this his fortress was like camping in an unknown land. The lift finally reached the top floor, and his guards scrambled to open the gates. Those were from Bridge 13 these days. He'd assigned Bridge 4 to other responsibilities, considering them too important for simple guard duty now that they were close to becoming Radiance. Increasingly anxious, Dalinar led the way past several pillars designed with representations of the Orders of Radiance. A set of steps took him up through a trap door onto the very roof of the tower. Although each tier was smaller than the one below it, this roof was still over 100 yards wide. It was cold up here, but someone had set up braziers for warmth and torches for light. The night was strikingly clear, and high above, Starspren swirled and made distant patterns. Dalinar wasn't sure what to make of the fact that no one, not even his sons, had questioned him when he'd announced his intent to marry in the middle of the night on the roof of the tower. He searched out Navani and was shocked to see that she'd found a traditional bridal crown. The intricate headdress of jade and turquoise complemented her wedding gown. Red for luck, it was embroidered with gold and shaped in a much looser style than the Hava, with wide sleeves and a graceful drape. Should Dalinar have found something more traditional to wear himself? He suddenly felt like a dusty, empty frame hung beside the gorgeous painting that was Navani in her wedding regalia. Elikar stiffly stood at her side, wearing a formal golden coat and loose Takama underskirt. He was paler than normal, following the failed assassination attempt during the Weeping, where he'd nearly bled to death. He'd been resting a great deal lately. Though they'd decided to forego the extravagance of a traditional Alethi wedding, they had invited some others. Brightlord Aladar and his daughter, Sabariel and his mistress, Kalami and Teshev to act as witnesses. He felt relieved to see them there. He'd feared Navani would be unable to find women willing to notarize the wedding. A smattering of Dalinar's officers and scribes filled out the small procession. At the very back of the crowd, gathered between the braziers, he spotted a surprising face. Kadash, the Ardent, had come as requested. His scarred, bearded face didn't look pleased, but he had come. A good sign. Perhaps with everything else happening in the world, a high prince marrying his widowed sister-in-law wouldn't cause too much of a stir. Dalinar stepped up to Navani and took her hands, one shrouded in a sleeve, the other warm to his touch.
"You look amazing," he said. "How did you find that?"
"A lady must be prepared."
Dalinar looked to Elikar, who bowed his head to Dalinar. This will further muddy the relationship between us, Dalinar thought, reading the same sentiment on his nephew's features. Gavilar would not appreciate how his son had been handled. Despite his best intentions, Dalinar had trodden down the boy and seized power. Elikar's time recuperating had worsened the situation, as Dalinar had grown accustomed to making decisions on his own. However, Dalinar would be lying to himself if he said that was where it had begun. His actions had been done for the good of Alethkar, for the good of Roshar itself. But that didn't deny the fact that, step by step, he'd usurped the throne, despite claiming all along he had no intention of doing so. Dalinar let go of Navani with one hand and rested it on his nephew's shoulder. "I'm sorry, son," he said.
"You always are, uncle," Elikar said. "It doesn't stop you, but I don't suppose that it should. Your life is defined by deciding what you want, then seizing it. The rest of us could learn from that, if only we could figure out how to keep up."
Dalinar winced. "I have things to discuss with you, plans that you might appreciate. But for tonight, I simply ask your blessing, if you can find it to give."
"This will make my mother happy," Elikar said. "So, fine."
Elikar kissed his mother on the forehead, then left them, striding across the rooftop. At first, Dalinar worried the king would stalk down below, but he stopped beside one of the more distant braziers, warming his hands.
"Well," Dabani said, "the only one missing is your spren, Dalinar. If he's going to..."
A strong breeze struck the top of the tower, carrying with it the scent of recent rainfall, of wet stone and broken branches. Navani gasped, pulling against Dalinar. A presence emerged in the sky. The Stormfather encompassed everything, a face that stretched to both horizons, regarding the men imperiously. The air became strangely still, and everything but the tower's top seemed to fade. It was as if they had slipped into a place outside of time itself. Light eyes and guards alike murmured or cried out. Even Dalinar, who had been expecting this, found himself taking a step backward, and he had to fight the urge to cringe down before the spren.
"Oaths," the Stormfather rumbled, "are the soul of righteousness. If you are to survive the coming tempest, oaths must guide you."
"I am comfortable with oaths, Stormfather," Dalinar called up to him. "As you know."
"Yes, the first in millennia to bind me."
Somehow, Dalinar felt the spren's attention shifting to Navani.
"And you, do oaths hold meaning to you?"
"The right oaths," Navani said.
"And your oath to this man?"
"I swear it to him, and to you, and any who care to listen. Dalinar Kholin is mine and I am his."
"You have broken oaths before."
"All people have," Navani said, unbowed. "We are frail and foolish. This one I will not break. I vow it."
The Stormfather seemed content with this, though it was far from a traditional Alethi wedding oath.
"Bondsmith?" he asked.
"I swear it likewise," Dalinar said, holding to her. "Navani Kholin is mine and I am hers. I love her."
"So be it."
Dalinar had anticipated thunder, lightning, some kind of celestial trump of victory. Instead, the timelessness ended. The breeze passed. The Stormfather vanished. All through the gathered guests, smoky blue Osprin rings burst out above heads. But not Navani's. Instead, she was ringed by Glory Spren, the golden lights rotating above her head. Nearby, Sabariel rubbed his temple, as if trying to understand what he'd seen. Dalinar's new guards sagged, looking suddenly exhausted. Adolin, being Adolin, let out a whoop. He ran over, trailing Joy Spren in the shape of blue leaves that hurried to keep up with him. He gave Dalinar, then Navani, enormous hugs. Renarin followed, more reserved, but, judging from the wide grin on his face, equally pleased. The next part became a blur, shaking hands, speaking words of thanks, insisting that no gifts were needed as they'd skipped that part of the traditional ceremony. It seemed that the Stormfather's pronouncement had been dramatic enough that everyone accepted it. Even Elokar, despite his earlier pique, gave his mother a hug and Dalinar a clasp on the shoulder before going below. That left only Kadash. The Ardent waited to the end. He stood with hands clasped before him as the rooftop emptied. To Dalinar, Kadash had always looked wrong in those robes. Though he wore the traditional squared beard, it was not an Ardent that Dalinar saw. It was a soldier, with a lean build, dangerous posture, and keen light violet eyes. He had a twisting old scar running up to and around the top of his shaved head. Kadash's life might now be one of peace and service, but his youth had been spent at war. Dalinar whispered a few words of promise to Navani, and she left him to go to the level below, where she'd ordered food and wine to be set up. Dalinar stepped over to Kadash, confident. The pleasure of finally having done what he'd postponed for so long surged through him. He was married to Navani. This was a joy that he'd assumed lost to him since his youth, an outcome he hadn't even allowed himself to dream would be his. He would not apologize for it, or for her.
"Bright Lord," Kadash said quietly. "Formality, old friend?"
"I wish I could only be here as an old friend," Kadash said softly. "I have to report this, Dalinar. The Ardentia will not be pleased.
Surely they cannot deny my marriage if the Stormfather himself blessed the union." "A Spren? You expect us to accept the authority of a Spren?"
"A remnant of the Almighty."
"Dalinar, that's blasphemy," Kadash said, voice pained.
"Kadash, you know I'm no heretic. You fought by my side.
That's supposed to reassure me?
Memories of what we did together, Dalinar? I appreciate the man you have become. You should avoid reminding me of the man you once were."
Dalinar paused, and a memory swirled up from the depths inside him, one he hadn't thought of in years. One that surprised him. Where had it come from? He remembered Kadash, bloodied, kneeling on the ground, having retched until his stomach was empty. A hardened soldier who had encountered something so vile that even he was shaken. He'd left to become an Ardent the next day.
"The Rift," Dalinar whispered. "Rathalos."
"Dark times need not be dredged up," Kadash said.
"This isn't about that day, Dalinar. It's about today. And what you've been spreading among the scribes. Talk of these things you've seen in visions."
"Holy messages," Dalinar said, feeling cold. "Sent by the Almighty."
"Holy messages claiming the Almighty is dead?" Kadash said. "Arriving on the eve of the return of the Voidbringers? Dalinar, can't you see how this looks? I'm your Ardent, technically your slave, and yes, perhaps still your friend. I've tried to explain to the councils in Carbranth and Yakaved that you mean well. I tell the Ardents of the Holy Enclave that you're looking back toward when the Knights Radiant were pure, rather than their eventual corruption. I tell them that you have no control over these visions. But Dalinar, that was before you started teaching that the Almighty was dead. They're angry enough over that, and now you've gone and defied conventions, spitting in the eyes of the Ardents? I personally don't think it matters if you marry Navani. That prohibition is outdated, to be sure. But what you've done tonight—"
Dalinar reached to place a hand on Kadash's shoulder, but the man pulled away.
"Old friend," Dalinar said softly, "honor might be dead, but I have felt something else, something beyond, a warmth and a light. It is not that God has died. It is that the Almighty was never God. He did his best to guide us, but he was an impostor, or perhaps only an agent, a being not unlike a Spren,
He had the power of a god, but not the pedigree.
Kadash looked at him, eyes widening. Please, Dalinar, don't ever repeat what you just said. I think I can explain away what happened tonight. Maybe. But you don't seem to realize you're aboard a ship barely afloat in a storm while you insist on doing a jig on the prow.
I will not hold back truth if I find it, Kadash, Dalinar said. You just saw that I am literally bound to a spren of oaths. I don't dare lie.
I don't think you would lie, Dalinar, Kadash said. But I do think you can make mistakes. Do not forget that I was there. You are not infallible.
There? Dalinar thought as Kadash backed up, bowed, then turned and left. What does he remember that I cannot?
Dalinar watched him go. Finally, he shook his head and went to join the midnight feast, intent on being done with it as soon as was seemly. He needed time with Navani. His wife.